Alex Blair joining us from the On Air podcast. Good morning, Alex. How are we doing?
I'm good, Ryan. How are you?
Very good. We are overdue to get back to Kananaskis. It's been a while since I've seen you in person. They're still doing foursomes out there. We can't share the cart, but we can share the foursome.
Well, I think I got out of that bunker on number one about yesterday, so I'm ready to go again whenever you are.
That was great. We had not met in person before. We chatted a bit. A mutual friend of ours had asked if I could help get you out, and I'm like, yeah, that'd be cool. And I'm like, I don't know if this guy's a good golfer or not. And on the first hole, I was very concerned how the rest of the day was going to go. It was your worst hole. That was the saving grace.
Oh, I think I was in the bunker for five straight. It's like, I literally tell my buddies, I'm like, it's like that golf nightmare that you have occasionally where you wake up and it's like you forgot how to swing. And doing it with someone you don't know, it's just like the ultimate. It was just, yeah. So I'm glad the round turned around a little bit, but it was, I'm like, oh, okay, hi. Like, I'm Alex. Like, nice to meet you, Ryan. It's going to be a long day.
I'd forgotten about that, to be totally honest, but now that you brought it up, yes.
No, that one's seared in my mind.
Okay, well, just know that I had forgotten. I won't now, but I had at one point forgotten about it. Yeah. The Canucks are fascinating right now. Not that there isn't other places that are complete. Like, it's like the car wreck. You can't help but look. Even if it's not slowing traffic, you're rubbernecking. Buffalo feels that way. Man, here in Calgary, it's got the feel of a really dramatic offseason where I don't know that there's anything that's off limits. But Vancouver especially, owner under fire, GM has not posted the results that anyone expected or that he claimed he would get when he was hired. It's been 7 years. And universally applauded by players and fans, the coach can't get a new deal. Is there another team where all three layers, coach, GM, and owner, have so many question marks around them?
The only one I can think of is Buffalo. But you're right. Like, it's as I tweeted yesterday, and it got a lot of reaction from the Vancouver fan base. This, to me, and this has been for quite some time, this is an ownership issue. You know, like, listen, I think Jim Benning has proven himself to be sort of a bottom 10 GM in the league. But the Canucks ownership has known that. Like, Jim hasn't evolved. He has not changed in the 7 years he's been GM. As recently as 2 years ago, they extended him, and he's got two more years on his deal. And quite frankly, you know, at this point, ownership is keeping him in place strictly because they don't want to have to pay out the remainder of his contract while paying another GM. And that, I think, has become very apparent to not just the fans, not just the media, but I think this season it sort of infiltrated its way into the locker room with sort of the organization's handling of the COVID situation. You saw what had to happen with JT Miller kind of coming out, speaking vocally. There was this sort of very indirect, direct answer from Captain Bo Horvat about the support the players felt like they got from the organization through that. And the franchise is at a real tipping point right here, and I'm fascinated to see what ownership is going to do in the next 2 weeks, because they've made it very clear that they are trying to do this on the cheap and not spend any money, but they have backed themselves into a corner where I'm not sure there's any way out of this unless they make some significant changes.
And ironically, the roster has not been built on the cheap. No one has paid more for bottom half of the roster talent than the Canucks when you start looking at the cost of a third pair, a bottom six forward group, players that are on the taxi squad or in Utica. That has them in a very vulnerable position this offseason, where if I'm the Seattle Kraken, why wouldn't I offer Hughes or Pettersson?
Yeah, well, I think Pettersson's very much in play. Quinn Hughes is actually, because he didn't play enough games the first season, he's actually a 10.2 C.
He's like Johnny Gaudreau. Johnny played the one game to burn the year, so he's not eligible for offer sheet. Good distinction, but Pettersson is on the table.
For sure. And, you know, we've kind of done the breakdown where, you know, the Canucks don't have that much money coming off the cap this year. And with the raises that you're going to have to offer both Hughes and Pettersson, it's almost going to be a wash. So realistically, you know, the Canucks have three defensemen under contract for next season. They're going to have to rebuild a significant portion of their defense. But it's not until the end of next season when they start to have a significant number of some of those bottom-end contracts that have been anchors for the team come off the cap. And I think they have somewhere in the neighborhood of $24, $25 million scheduled to come off the cap after next season. That also includes Roberto Luongo, who they're still paying for the cap recapture.
Right. Yeah.
But that sort of gives you an inkling of the situation they're in. They've got this good young core, but they've handcuffed themselves with these other contracts that, especially now with the pandemic and the flat cap, it'll be a nightmare to get out from underneath those. So you're realistically looking for this team to be another year away from even being in a position. And I think that's where the Tanner Pearson extension this year, where they gave him, 3.25 over 3 years for a player who has already shown he's declining. To me, I think that was one of the final straws for this fan base, because it just showed that Jim Benning had not learned, ownership had not learned from their mistakes in years past, and that they are about to jeopardize what many in Vancouver, and I think across the province of BC, expected would be, a really good era of Canucks hockey, looking forward over the next 10 years. And, I think that's in real jeopardy right now.
Yeah, no question. I mean, and then you hear the news the last week where they didn't officially offer Tyler Toffoli a contract. Not only were they tied to the cap, but financially especially. They were very concerned about money out, money in, not just a cap hit. Look at the way Holtby's deal is structured. That seemed to be a hang-up in getting something formal in front of Toffoli. That's interesting that owners of an NHL team were that tight on the money side. Not that they shouldn't be, concerned in a pandemic, but that they'd let it affect, theoretically, a contending window.
For sure. And I think, this has been a story that's been percolating for a good chunk of the season. I know Thomas Drance with The Athletic was really big at the beginning of the season, highlighting the fact that even though the Canucks are technically a cap team and even actually over the cap with LTIR, they actually had reduced their actual payout in salary this year by almost $20 million. So they're actually only paying out about $66 million in salary. They merged their AHL franchise with the St. Louis Blues, which was clearly a cost-saving measure. And, this is, I've reported that, based on, and this isn't unique to Vancouver, because every NHL franchise is going through this without any fans in the stands. And in some ways, Vancouver's probably in a better spot than most. But, the numbers that I've heard are that the Canucks are losing somewhere between $20 and $30 million this year. When you think about the cost associated with paying out $66 million in salary, and there's other costs of running the team and the organization, but the only money you've got coming in is your TV rights deal. You've got your radio rights deal. You've got some sponsorship, maybe your building rights, but they're losing a significant amount of money. But this is also a franchise that 10 years ago, profited almost $80 million in the 2011, cup run.
Wow.
And this is the top 10 revenue generating team in the league. So when you see how quickly the organization was quick to lay off, upwards of 50% of their organizational staff off the ice, some of the other cost cutting moves that they've made, I really wonder, because I think it's become apparent to young players on this organization who, let's be honest, if you're a young player with a bright future, you just want your organization to try as hard as you are to win, And I start to get the sense, we're seeing it in Buffalo, where it's clear that people are starting to wave the flag and say, hey, I'd like to get out of here. Yeah. I don't think we're there yet with the Canucks, but I do think the next couple of weeks and the next, 12 months could be really impactful for the long-term futures of some of their really notable players who are going to have control over, the futures of their careers and whether they want to spend them on the West Coast in Canada.
Boy, there's a lot of layers here. The coach, you talk about the young core superstar potential players needing deals, the GM, the owner, the money side thing. And then the COVID hits, the team doesn't say anything publicly. It takes a player saying it. You noted that. On top of that, you have Jake Virtanen now being accused of sexual assault. And again, there wasn't a spokesperson from the team except the lame duck coach who didn't have a contract had to be the one to address that publicly first. Was that a mistake, or is that just that there's never a good way to address these types of things because they're not good things to have to address?
No, I don't think it was a surprise, because I think in some ways that just represents the way the organization has kind of handled their business for the last, the better part of, well, I will say this, Jim Benning has never, his strength is not speaking to the media. It's just one of the areas that he hasn't been particularly good at. And when he came in, he was brought in by Trevor Linden, who, was a prince in Vancouver and was the president of hockey operations. And for, the beginning of his tenure, he would always sort of sit at the dais with Jim, and he would sort of help navigate the media. But when that relationship soured, the organization never replaced Trevor, and Jim has been out there kind of by himself, and Jim's gone a lot more quiet this year as well. To be fair to Jim, to some degree, the week that the Vertanen allegations were leveled, Jim and John Weisbrod, who you'd be familiar with from his time in Calgary, they were both in Texas scouting the under-18 championships. But as you know, a lot of people have noted, every press availability this year has been done over the internet. So, you know, It's not an excuse for Jim not to make himself available.
Right.
But I think it just highlights how thin this organization is at the top and how reactionary they are at the moment. And it's really interesting to see how far this team has fallen in a decade, because, you know, you go back to the 2010, 2011 era. And that was, you know, for a lot of people, the peak of the Canucks as an organization and franchise. Just the way, you know, I know they weren't revered outside of the province of BC, but the way they carried themselves and the professionalism top to bottom, it's quite remarkable to see how far the franchise has fallen in 10 years.
Yeah, it was, it felt like, boy, there's a progressive organization. It wasn't even like, where do they rank amongst the NHL? They were doing things that no one in the league had done. They were pushing the boundaries on all kinds of stuff in terms of training and travel and sleep. And, you know, it felt like they were a group that was cutting edge. And right now it feels rather prehistoric. It looks like watching the Chiarelli-led Oilers.
Completely. And I think that's the thing that's the most fascinating here is that, you know, I tweeted about this yesterday, that it's gone to the point where I feel like, and, you know, the organization has gotten quiet and it feels like there are going to be some changes. But I would be worried if ownership thinks that they can make Jim the sacrificial lamb here and then just replace him with, you know, some ho-hum or low, you know, young, cheaper GM option. Like this is at a point where I think the fan base, the city and the players are saying, hey, we're a year away from taking a run at it. We need somebody experienced with a lot of leadership that can set the tone for this organization going forward. And as I said, you know, everything, all the moves and all the decisions and everything we've seen from ownership over the last sort of 12 to 15 months has indicated that they want to go in a different direction from a cost standpoint. And yet they're at this point now where they need to make a really critical decision. And, you know, it's going to be really interesting to see what happens, because there have been some dark eras in Canucks hockey, but I'm not sure we've ever had as much promise on the ice with as much dysfunction off the ice. And I think that sort of ups the magnitude of the current situation and, you know, the unrest amongst the fan base and amongst, you know, just people looking at the organization and hoping that, you know, they just maximize their ability and they take a run at it and do everything in their power to give these players a chance to win the Stanley Cup at some point in their career.
Well, it's good for conversation. I don't know that it's necessarily functional on other levels. For more on that, the On Air podcast, tell us about it yourself and Israel Fair. All things Canucks would be a fair description of it.
Yeah, so some people in Calgary will be familiar because during the hockey season, the show was simulcast both on Sportsnet 650 in Vancouver and 960 here in Calgary. We've gone podcast only over the summer just because of our show typically aired on Saturdays, and with the Rogers commitment to the Blue Jays and some of the schedules, we just felt like it allowed us to be a little bit more consistent with a weekly show. So you can find the podcast, you know, wherever you find your podcasts. We usually record on Saturdays. We have, you know, primarily been focused on sort of the Canucks in Western Canada the last few weeks, but as we head into the playoffs here and approaching the NHL draft, I think we'll probably pull back and take a bigger look around the league. You know, fascinating with Calgary, they're going to have a top 10 pick as well. And as their season's gone, I'm fascinated to see, first off, if Brad remains the GM, and two, if he does, you know, what he does to sort of maneuver them out of what has been, you know, a multi-year sort of, you know, a lot of hope, but, you know, not a lot of results on the ice. And it feels like, you know, the Flames need as much change on the ice as the Canucks do off of it. So
Vancouver, Calgary, full popcorn gifts right now heading into the off season. No question. Once we get through these three miserable mean nothing games, great pleasure chatting with you, Alex. We'll do it again soon and we'll give you another chance on number one at Canada Ask Us. We'll see if you can get less than 10 out of that bunker.
I appreciate it, Ryan. Have a great weekend.